CMO Roundtable,
the podcast where we talk to CMOs and marketing professionals to find out what's working, what isn't, and how you can leverage their expertise to improve your marketing and conversions. Now, let's welcome our host, number one best-selling author and co-founder of Conversion Fanatics, Justin Christensen.
All right, welcome everybody. This is your host, Justin Christensen of the CMO Roundtable, and today, as always, we've got a fantastic guest. In fact, I'm really excited about this conversation because we both speak the optimization language, and our guest today is a co-founder and CEO of Carthook, a software app that provides Shopify stores with a better, more profitable checkout with one-click upsell capability. And I've used the product firsthand with our clients and absolutely love it. So I'm excited to have him on the podcast today. So Jordan, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me on. Thanks for the terrific introduction. So it's good to be here, good to speak with your audience. And yeah, like you said, we both speak the optimization language. I used to run an e-commerce business myself, so we can just kind of get into a whole bunch of different categories. Let's do it.
All sorts of fun stuff. Yeah, we've got lots of things we could talk about. So, I mean, give us a little backstory on Carthook and kind of what prompted you to, you know, create such a solution.
Yeah, it starts several years ago, actually, more like 6-7 years ago. Back then, I started an e-commerce business with my two brothers. So it was the three of us. Mm-hmm. And the way we broke it up was my older brother was responsible for getting traffic to the site, so SEO and paid ads. I was responsible for converting that traffic. Mm-hmm. My younger brother was responsible for everything after the purchase, so from customer service to fulfillment to shipping and so on. So I really spent a good year just staring at the site, saying, how do I convert more people that hit the site? And that's what started me on the optimization path. And what happened was we really did not know what we were doing when we first started it. We were looking at CSN stores and Hayneedle, right? That was then NetShops. Mm-hmm. And they were going for a strategy of having a bunch of different very niche stores, right? And the concept was you're more likely to buy fishing gear in a fishing store than you are in a sporting goods store. And the web made that possible, where you don't have to, you know, really build a whole new store. You build a new website. Mm-hmm. So we were kind of following along with that strategy. So we had a network of sites. Our most successful site sold solar lighting products. We had a hammock store, an electronic fireplaces store, basically things that were hard to find a large selection offline.
Nice.
And at first, I think we did like $400 the first month, and then $1,200 the next month. And then it started working, and when it started working on the optimization and conversion front, then we kind of turned on the gas on ads, and we very quickly went from, you know, 1,000 a month to 5 and then 10 and then 20 and then got up to right around 70,000 a month, and then ended up selling the business after, I think, 13 or 14 months.
Oh, nice. Congrats on an exit.
Thanks. Yeah, it was great. It wasn't life-changing, but what I call it is career-changing. Because it really set me off on the e-commerce path and specifically looking at optimization. And so after selling the business, I wanted to get into the software side. Really what I wanted to do was create recurring revenue, mm-hmm. right? If I'm going to be very transparent about it. Mm-hmm. I look back at all that effort and all that time and knowledge and sweat that went in to making, let's call it, right around $500,000 in revenue throughout that year. And then the next month, if I didn't pump a bunch into it, it would just go way, way down. And so I promised myself that the next business would have a recurring element so that effort pays off and continues to grow in the way it pays off. So yeah. I decided software was the way to do it. I wanted to stay in the e-commerce world. And so what we did is we looked back at the tools that we used as an e-commerce merchant. And we identified a cart abandonment tool that had a great ratio of crappy product to very high value. Yep. So the product we were using was not good at all, but it still made us $3,000-$4,000 every single month. So when it came time to look at the finances every month, that was one of those no-brainer, well, I'm never going to cancel that $100 a month because it makes me $4,000. Mm-hmm. And so I looked at that and said, what happens if we build a better version of that, an actual decent cart abandonment product. That sounded to me like a good business proposition. I knew I could sell it. I talked to a bunch of people in the market and so on. And that's how the company got started with the cart abandonment product.
Nice. And what I mean, upsells are vitally important. I mean, we've known it in the direct response world forever. You know, my 15-year career, what a big turning point in that career was figuring out that we could sell more stuff when somebody bought something.
Yep.
So tell me what made the shift into creating the funnel aspect as it ties to e-commerce.
Right. Our second product, really.
Yeah. It's all about, increasing the average order value. And we have all these solutions and everything, specifically even in Shopify, that, those who like this also like this. And they bought and they get to add more products to their order. But what led you down the path to actually creating a funnel solution?
So the way it happened was really through the checkout page more than the upsells. And so what I mean by that is, our cart abandonment app worked with a bunch of different platforms. I ran my stores on Volusion, so that was the first integration we did. And then we went out to Magento and WooCommerce and Lemonstand and so on. We didn't go into the Shopify market because part of our magic was the JavaScript that captures the email as soon as it's typed on the page.
Yeah.
And when we looked over at Shopify, we would see that you can't put JavaScript on their checkout page. And so we lose that magic. We have to go to the API like everybody else. So we don't capture the email as soon as possible. We capture the email when the visitor goes from step one to step two. So we kept looking at that and saying, so there are cheaper options. They're not bad options. Why should we go into that market? We don't really have a good reason for people to buy our product. And so we hesitated and hesitated. And eventually we had enough people that said, I want to use your product. Just integrate with Shopify already. So we said, fine. When we went through that process, what dawned on me was that the killer app, the killer idea, wasn't working around their checkout to accomplish cart abandonment. What the real killer product was, a better checkout.
Mm-hmm.
And so we set out to build a customizable one-page checkout for Shopify, which is what we did. That's what our product does. In the process of building that checkout product and really listening to the audience, listening to our customers and doing a lot of research in Facebook groups, right? That's where a lot of the energy in Shopify is these days on the marketing end, a ton of Facebook groups that are very, very active. So what we saw was digital marketers like yourselves bringing over strategies from the digital marketing world into the physical product world. And
yep.
And the main channel for that we saw was ClickFunnels. So ClickFunnels was teaching a whole new generation of people about digital marketing, and it was also giving tools to professional digital marketers who had a lot of experience to accomplish things in like a lead pages type of way. Right.
Yep.
So lead pages made that big innovation of what you see is what you get, like really easy landing pages. So a marketer doesn't have to go to the tech team every single time they want to make a change. ClickFunnels came along and put all those landing pages in a row and said, nobody does it one page at a time. Everyone does it through a funnel. So let's let you build funnels easily. And then Russell Brunson, right, the founder of Funnels, he made his a lot of his money and a lot of his success. And most importantly, the case study that he showed when selling ClickFunnels was selling a physical product. And so what happened was a lot of these digital marketers bought into the ClickFunnels model. Then once you start selling physical products on ClickFunnels, you very quickly realize that it's not the perfect tool for selling physical products.
Yep.
Right? It doesn't have inventory, shipping, fulfillment, all these concepts that are necessary for selling physical products. So then people would go over to Shopify and they'd say, oh my God, this order management system is amazing. It's got all these apps, but it doesn't let me sell the way I want it to sell. It doesn't let me do these upsells. And so in that ClickFunnels group, between the ClickFunnels Facebook group and the Shopify Facebook groups, it became very, very obvious that what was necessary in the market was a bridge, something that allowed digital marketers to sell physical products the way they already know how to sell. And so that's when we added the upsells to our checkout app. And that's where we started off. We kind of understood that there's this market of people who already know how they want to sell, and they want to use Shopify as their order management system, and that's where our product came in right in the middle.
Nice. So how are people using your tool to really maximize average order value?
So they're doing a few things. We have two main features, and people use them in these different ways. Our first main feature, the way people use our tool, is directly inside of their Shopify store. So they tag products on the back end of their Shopify store with a cart hook tag. And what that does is when that product is put in the cart by a visitor, when they go to the checkout, instead of going to the Shopify checkout, they go to the cart hook checkout, which they can then put upsells in back of. And they can choose which upsells to be shown based on which product is purchased on the front end in the checkout.
Yeah.
So that's like the first layer. That's the first thing that people do with our product. They customize their checkout page, they add trust symbols and so on. They might make a few changes, they might add some like triple B logos and trust symbols and so on. And then what they do is they start looking at upsell funnels and connecting them to individual products in their store. So when you buy this product, this is the set of upsells that I want you to see.
Is there any magic formula to the physical world upsell chain that you care to share? Like, as far as, you know, what types of products, what, you know, offers are working effectively on the back?
I can't say that there's a magic formula. We see a variety of different things working. We see a lot of people starting off with selling more of the same as the first upsell.
Yep.
So product A gets purchased, just sell product A again in the upsell, make it a deal, you know, get one for your family member, get one for your spouse, that sort of thing. So just get another one of what you just bought. So that works. That's a good place to start. We see a lot of downselling into a cheaper product, right, as expected.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the biggest things, the biggest trends we see is upselling into a subscription, right? The same way I wanted recurring revenue as an e-commerce merchant, and I had the boneheaded idea to build freaking software in order to be able to do it, other merchants selling physical products want the same recurring revenue, but they have the good sense not to build software for it and just to sell their physical products, but on a subscription. So upselling into a subscription is a really big trend.
Yeah, that's vitally. I mean, especially I could see that particularly in the consumable space.
Right. Anything that's consumable, I would recommend it. I mean, if I were in that business personally, that would be my sole focus. My sole focus would be, how do I get people through the checkout page so that I can offer them the continuity program? That would be my whole business strategy.
Are you able to, with your solution, to offer upsells on checkout? Like in page?
Like the order bump?
Yep.
Nope, not yet. But that will be, I guess it's 2 months realistically. Right now what we're doing is we're working on a new version of our admin that makes things like easier and better. And then changing up our front end pages to be on a Laravel stack, which is straight HTML and CSS instead of Angular, to make tracking easier and load time faster. And then we're releasing a new editor.
Nice.
When that happens, that's when we'll kind of restart new features on the checkout page itself, like new elements, order bumps, and so on.
Is there anything that keeps you up at night when running a software company?
I mean, that's like a sick, twisted joke.
It is kind of, because I've been down the software route.
Yeah.
I know what it takes.
Yeah, it's hard. It really is. What we've tried to do, we try to be patient in this, right? I am not patient. I want everything to go faster. And what I've learned through this process is that with software, it really is better to be patient sometimes. So when I say that, we had a good 6 months of not wanting people to sign up, literally just putting blockers in the way, not showing very much of the product on the site at all, requiring a demo before you could even sign up, and so on.
I went through your blocks, by the way.
Yes. So
we know.
we put those blocks to make sure that we only talk to people who are willing to break through them, and that we could slow it down, that we could have a reasonable number of signups, because in the process of ramping up to get this product ready, the whole thing about this product is, like with the cart abandonment app, or let's say a task management app or something like it, if you screw up, you apologize and you fix it. Mm-hmm. With a checkout app, if you screw up, you're costing people money.
Yeah.
There's very, very little room for screwing up. And so we thought it was better off to go slow with it. So we used to process, even just 6 months ago, we were processing $5,000 a day. And since we've opened things up to allow people to kind of sign up on their own, we've had, you know, $1 million a day.
Yeah.
So, right. So ramping up there was not the easy thing, and it had to be because there's just very little room for error. So our focus for a long time was reliability over features.
Yep.
Right. That was like the bet, the gamble in the market was, do we add more features or do we become the most reliable? And we said, let's become the most reliable. Once we can solidify that, then we can add features.
Mm-hmm. That's very smart, because then it ends up taking you three times the time and three times the money anyway.
Yes.
Yeah, to actually build it out, you might as well build something stable. And I went down that route and lost. All my backups failed, all my stuff. I mean, it was painful. Yes. It was a painful experience. So I feel it.
Yeah. And we, even inside the product, you can tell the thought that goes into the customer's point of view, right? If you're an e-commerce merchant, you just send out an email to 50,000 people or did some Instagram partnership or something. If something goes wrong, you want to kill somebody. And, yep. And we, our like mantra is that we never want to get in the way of somebody paying you money. Yeah. So even inside the product, we have like an oh shit button. Like if anything goes wrong, you click this one button, all of your cart hook funnels turn off, and it defaults all the way back to your Shopify checkout.
Nice.
Yep.
Very smart. So backing up to optimization of e-commerce in general, are there any tips that you can give people, whether they're just getting started or, you know, maybe they have a seasoned store that they can really maximize their conversion efforts?
Yeah, you know what? I think it's actually worth finishing my thought from before on the second way people use our product, because it's directly related to that question. The short answer is you got to do more work, and that work has to be based on real findings. So what people do is once they do that first step of using Carthook inside their Shopify store, once they identify the winners, they then do more work. And what I mean by that is they will stop sending traffic into the Shopify product page, mm-hmm. and they will build out a standalone landing page for that product specifically, and they will do more work. Literally, they will add more videos, more testimonials, more copy, more features, more benefits, more videos, everything on that page, remove the navigation, get the customer, the visitor focused on a decision of yes or no on that page, and then they connect that directly to our checkout. So that's our second feature, is called a product funnel, which just creates a link. Mm-hmm. And you can take that link and put it anywhere you want, and when put into a browser, that link loads up a checkout page with that product preloaded and ready for purchase. So people will send Facebook traffic directly to a landing page that then links directly to our checkout, upsell, and thank you, and the order goes into Shopify. So on the front end, the visitor doesn't even touch the Shopify store. They go from ad to landing page to Carthook checkout, upsells, and thank you, but the order still goes into Shopify for the typical normal order management that they already have set up.
That's smart.
Yeah, and that, I think, speaks directly to your question. What do you need to do to optimize? I mean, you need to do more work. You need to look at what's working and improve the things that are working. Right? The way we used to think about it back in our e-commerce days is you need everything to line up like an electric circuit. If there's one thing that breaks it, like let's say your shopping cart page doesn't convert well, it screws up the math of the entire funnel.
Mm-hmm.
You really kind of have to line up the conversion rate on each individual page, right? Your ad has to be right. It has to be congruent with what they see immediately on the landing page. The landing page has to be benefits focused, speaking directly to the type of customer, the type of visitor that just got brought in from that exact ad. Then the process to adding that to the cart needs to build trust, needs to show the trust symbols, make sure that you're removing as much hesitation as possible, remove the navigation, keep them focused, going to the checkout page. And there is just continues to be more work. Show the credit card symbols, show the PayPal logo, do the actual work of putting a testimonial on that page also. Mm-hmm. On the upsell, don't just throw a picture of a product and a buy button. Explain why it's good for it. Put a bulleted list. So I don't really think there's that much shortcutting when it comes to this game. It's just identifying what needs to be improved and then doing additional work.
You're speaking my language for sure.
Yeah.
That's primarily why I'm in business.
Right. I mean, yeah, there are individual tactics. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have a funny story I tell from our e-commerce days. We used live chat software, which now is, you know, proliferated. Everyone uses live chat. I would recommend live chat to anyone, at the very least when you're first starting out or before you know exactly how to sell your product and why people buy it. Not only can you make some additional sales, but you learn what's missing from your page.
Yeah.
So if you hear the same question 2-3 times in a week, guess what? Just take that question, put the answer on the page.
Yeah, that qualitative data is definitely.
Yeah, I love the qualitative data. That's what I like. You know, yeah. Some people are super super quant driven, and I like the qualitative, like getting a sense of what people are looking for and why.
Well, and that's what we come at it from our conversion rate optimization angle too, is people are like, oh, you're just going to split test buttons, you know, and things like that. It's like, well, there's a process to it. We actually want to figure out what your visitors want, what they don't want, what they like, what they dislike, and then give them everything that they do want.
Yep. Yep. They tell you.
Yeah.
They tell you exactly what they want and what they need to know and how they feel about your pricing and what additional features they want in your product. They tell you. Not to listen is not doing yourself any favors. And the other thing we learned from our live chat software, we used one called LivePerson. I don't even know if it's around.
It's still around.
They went enterprise or something. It's a different thing. But what that app did is it showed us the path of the visitor in real time. So it had like the doorbell sound of like a retail shop when someone like came in the door. So you'd get notified when someone came in, you'd see which ad they came in from, and then you could watch where they went on the site. And one of the more interesting things that we found was people would go from an ad directly onto the product page that we wanted them to. Good. Then they'd add it to the cart. Excellent, right? We're getting excited. We're going to make a sale. And then from the cart, they kept going to the About Us page, and we could not understand, what are you people doing? And eventually it dawned on us, we're just not building enough trust.
Yeah.
Someone's coming in from a Google ad, sees a landing page for a solar light that we're selling for $100, then they want it, it's right for them, they put it in the cart, and then they're saying to themselves, who am I about to give $100 mm-hmm. for a solar-powered light? And that's when they go to the About Us page, and they would leave. And eventually, when we got a clue about it, we optimized our About Us page to build trust. We put pictures of ourselves. We put testimonials. We put our 5-point pledge. We put our shipping information, our returns policy. And then we would see people go to the About Us page and then come right back to the cart and onto the checkout. It's like we had literally just gotten over the hurdle in their mind of, wait a minute, who am I about to give money to? And then we did a good enough job explaining to them who we were that they were about to do business with. And then they were comfortable making the purchase.
Nice. Yeah, that's awesome. So I've got just a couple more questions for you. This is actually – time has actually flown by.
I get all excited about
this. Yeah, and coming into this, I didn't even have a whole set list of questions. We're just kind of making it up as we go.
Yep.
And it's been awesome information. I've got a ton of notes here to write down. But I want to switch gears just a little bit. But what are your predictions for like digital marketing and e-commerce for the next year?
So what we talk about internally a lot is the flip between desktop and mobile, right? So it used to be desktop had more visits and more purchases. Mm-hmm. Then there was one year where it almost flipped. There were more visits to mobile, but there were still more purchases on desktop. And last year, if you take a look at Shopify's end of year report, it has now fully flipped. More visits and more purchases on mobile, and it's never going backwards.
No.
So that's it. Now that's officially the new reality moving forward. And so we keep looking at that mobile process and scratching our heads at how bad it is. It's still bad.
Mm. It's terrible.
It's terrible. I mean, I think I bought something a few days ago from like Bonobos or something. Bonobos does a relatively good job of it. But if you're on your phone and I'm typing in my address and like deleting and going back and holding it to fix the way I spelled something, it's just not going to be like that. It's not going to last. That's not the way it's going to be, call it a year or two from now. And so how do we start to think about and gear up for the eventuality? How do we participate in pushing things forward? So what we say is that our ideal is that 18 months, 2 years from now, our default checkout page template does not have any fields, right? When you look at it, when you look at a Shopify checkout page on your phone, in order to view the cart summary, you have to hit a button so it extends and it shows you your cart summary.
Yeah.
We think that'll be the same thing for fields. Like if you're still a dummy who doesn't have an easy pass and you'd like to go really slow through the toll, click this button and start typing in your address. But for the majority of people who have an easy pass, right, who want to go through the toll quickly, it will be an array of options that are linked to, I think, most likely directly to your phone, to the device.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I'm just dumbfounded every time I go to a site, and we critique a lot of websites too, and it's like, how come you don't pre-fill? Like, everybody's got Google Fill, and everybody's got all of this stuff that's already got it populated, but they don't allow for it. And then I usually leave because I don't have time for that.
Right, and you saw what happened in the market. Someone, Conversion Pirate, who's a great content marketer in the e-commerce space, this guy out in Slovenia, actually where my dev team is, he came out with a hack, with the Google API hack, where you can drop a little JavaScript into the Shopify checkout JavaScript field or some other field, and that will allow you to do Google autocomplete, address autocomplete on your Shopify checkout page. And that bubbled up and became really, really popular, that one blog post. He kind of made a name for himself off of that. And then what did you see a week or two ago? Shopify released the same feature themselves.
Yeah, they have
to. So it's like, they have to, because people are yelling at them, like, why do I have to do this weird hack that some dude in Slovenia taught me instead of actually being supported?
Yeah,
yeah. So amazing all stuff. The stuff is, yeah, it's fun now because they're, you know, physical product, e-commerce, that's where the energy is and that's where the innovation's happening. So it's a fun time.
Awesome. So last question is, if you had one tip for people with their e-commerce marketing, what would it be?
For their e-commerce marketing.
Yep. Besides go over to carthook.com and buy it. But
Look, the truth is Carthook isn't right for everyone. The people that it is right for, it's great for. But I think Carthook is a tool that people use to go the extra mile, to optimize more, to maximize, right? But you can't count on Carthook to be a golden ticket that just helps you find success.
Yeah.
What you need to do, and I think this is related to what my tip would be, is you need to find your winners. What we found when we had our stores, we'd have, let's say, 100 to 200 SKUs, and one or two of them would bring in 80, 90% plus of the profit.
Yeah, it's the 80-20 rule.
Right, and in e-commerce, it's no different. And so the hardest thing in e-commerce is just getting started and just being live and selling, and people get caught up on trying to have a huge array of products and a million variants, and really what you need to do is you need to find your winner. You need to find your one or two winners that work for you, and then push that as hard as it can possibly go and expand it as much as it can possibly go into different variants, different options, and different so on, as long as it's your winner. And that way you're focused on what's making you a profit instead of all the other distractions in e-commerce that can pull you in. So I think that would be my advice. That's what I would do right now. If someone said start an e-commerce business, you need to feed your family, I would just say, okay, I need one or two products that are going to sell. I don't need this huge line. I don't need to think about email marketing. I don't need to do anything but find my winners and then build my business around those.
That's some great advice. So before we officially sign off, how can folks connect with you?
I'm at jordan@carthook.com. My Twitter is @JordanGall. We're very open. Our support team is phenomenal. Our success team is as well. So we're happy to have conversations, help people out. So you can reach me there, email me, hit me up on Twitter. I love talking about this stuff, as you can tell. So
yeah, awesome.
Feel free to reach out.
Awesome, awesome. Well, I truly appreciate you being on the show. Thanks again, folks, for tuning in. I hope you gained some valuable insights out of what Jordan had to say about maximizing your e-commerce effectiveness. And be sure to like us, rate us, and share this episode out so others can experience the goodness as well. So until next time, we'll talk to you guys again soon. Thanks.
Thanks so much for listening to the CMO Roundtable. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to rate us, subscribe, and give us a share. For more information about how you can accelerate your marketing results and to request your in-depth conversion analysis, visit conversionfanatics.com.